evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. This program is recorded via remote and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 15, 2020. South Sudan records its first COVID-19 death.
While arrangements were being made to for referral to the Dongaran Infectious Disease Center, the victim sadly succumbed to his illness, and the results came out today confirming the cause of death to be respiratory failure due to COVID-19.
And several hotel employees sue their managers for what they call unfair treatment.
The Minister of Labor actually is responding very negative about the dismissal of those employees, and they are the citizens of this country. They are working in this country and they are feeding this country. They are paying tax to the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan has recorded its first death from the deadly coronavirus on Thursday. The identity and other details of the deceased were not provided during an announcement by the country's high-level task force on COVID-19. South Sudan's public health laboratory in Juba confirmed 28 new cases of coronavirus, bringing the total number of people infected with COVID-19 to 231, with three recoveries. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Health Ministry Undersecretary Dr. Makur Matur Koryom, who is also a member of South Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19, says the deceased arrived at a military hospital in the capital Juba on Wednesday evening in a critical condition.
While arrangements were being made for referral to the Dongaran Infectious Disease Center, the victim sadly succumbed to his illness, and the results came out today confirming the cause of death to be respiratory failure due to COVID-19 infection.
There are reports that the COVID-19 victim is a senior South Sudanese military official. South Sudan Army spokesperson Major General Lul Roy Kwong tells South Sudan in Focus he has not heard of a military officer or official dying from COVID-19 and directed us to speak with Dr. Matur, who identified the deceased as a high-profile South Sudanese personality. The deceased is among 28 new COVID-19 cases the task force announced last night, said Matur. 27 of the 28 are South Sudanese, one is a Kenyan. Dr. Matur says two of the new cases have a history of contact with a non-COVID-19 patient. 20 were identified from random screenings in Juba, and the remaining 6 cases were tested in Juba following alerts from members of the public. Dr. Matur is urging citizens to immediately report suspected coronavirus cases to health officials so they can get tested and, if confirmed, be treated before it is too late.
The high-level task force take the incident of the death to urge members of the public to report suspicious cases early enough to the nearest health facilities or call the Ministry of Health hotline 6666. It's important because almost all the suspects that we have at the moment in the facility, including a death arrived at facilities at very late hour due to delay at home, or they were managed in private facilities for some time before they were sent to our health facilities in critical conditions.
As of Thursday evening, there were 3,986 samples at the public health laboratory in Juba in need of being tested for coronavirus. The health ministry also says it is tracing 465 people who came into contact with the COVID-19 patients. Speaking to reporters in Juba Thursday, Health Ministry spokesperson Dr. Thuoi Loi said health officials suspect there are many more unconfirmed COVID-19 cases in communities across the country.
By simple calculation, when we know one case
we say that there are another 2 point cases that we don't know outside there. And since there is no point five human being, we round up to three and we say, if we have one case, then we have at least another three cases that we don't know of. So you can do simple arithmetic, simple calculation, and calculate simply how many cases that are outside there that we don't know.
Dr. Loy is calling on the public to continue to practice social distancing, wear masks in public, and follow other preventive measures outlined by the World Health Organization and Health Ministry.
All of us in the Republic of South Sudan, we are at risk, and we don't know now who has it and who doesn't have it. And the only way to do that is for us to consistently implement what the health experts are telling us. Keep social distancing, hand hygiene, no hand checking.
Both WHO and Health Ministry officials in South Sudan said last week that some COVID-19 patients had refused to cooperate with health workers involved with contact tracing. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United Nations is calling for mental health care to be given to millions of people suffering psychological distress from fear, loneliness, economic upheavals, and any abuse triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic. A UN policy brief entitled COVID-19 and the Need for Action on Mental Health, issued by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, explores the issues brought on by the crisis and offers recommendations. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
National surveys carried out this year reveal widespread prevalence of distress in populations, with levels as high as 35% in China, 60% in Iran, and 45% in the United States. Similar studies among healthcare workers find anxiety levels have risen an average of 45% in countries such as Canada, China, and Pakistan. Devorah Kestel is director of the World Health Organization's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. She says measures must be taken now to protect and promote care for such existing conditions.
This is something that needs to be done in the middle of the crisis so that we can prevent things to become worse in the near future. We are all witnessing in every country of the world the risk of an economic turmoil that will affect people.
Kestel says mental health problems have surged during similar economic crises in the past, leading to high rates of suicide. One of the major recommendations in the UN Secretary General's policy brief is to ensure mental health and psychosocial support are widely available in any emergency. What may be feasible in rich countries may not be possible in the developing world. For example, WHO notes 1 in 5 people in South Sudan has a mental health condition, with only one professional available for every 4 million people. Kestel tells VOA that the WHO and other agencies have been working for years to strengthen the capacity of non-mental health professionals to provide care.
We are promoting the modalities where the community, some community leaders or sectors within the community, such as traditional healers in some contexts, could receive the basic knowledge and training that is needed in order to provide care to those in need.
The United Nations says psychological trauma will remain after COVID-19. The disease caused by the coronavirus is gone. It urges nations to reform, strengthen, and invest more money in their mental health care systems. It says these services will be needed to support societies as they recover from the terrible consequences of this life-changing event. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coping with the pandemic has been a personal trial for almost everyone in the world, but from a professional point of view, health and hospital workers are facing some of the most difficult challenges. The response against COVID-19 has also meant heroic efforts by many workers behind the scenes as they procure equipment and supplies and organize personnel. for the next part of our ongoing series on interviews with those on the front line. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke via Zoom with veteran nurse Christina Masvidal, now the Senior Director of Patient Safety and Risk Management for Jackson Mental Systems in Miami, Florida.
So we are always quite busy, like you just said, but when COVID came into the picture, it was kind of like watching a hurricane that was out in the ocean and you were waiting for it to hit your city. And we were doing as much as we possibly could to prepare and anticipate based on what we heard internationally, which wasn't such great information, right? And you're trusting an outside source. We had to break down every process that we normally anticipate and are trained for, but step it up exponentially, understanding that this virus was very, very lethal.
What did that involve specifically?
So anything associated with corona, from preparing our staff, ensuring that they felt comfortable to take care of these patients, to gathering our protective eye and body gear, to making sure that we had enough rooms that could possibly anticipate the number of patients we would receive during this pandemic.
That meant a lot more equipment too.
Right. We had to make sure we had the ventilators. We had to make sure that we had enough staff trained on those ventilators, that we had enough ICU nurses, and that we could actually reorganize the other staff for elective surgeries and put them in other parts of the hospital to kind of decompress the stress on the staff. So you really felt like, I'm just doing the best I possibly can for a storm that I really never was trained to deal with. We dealt with tuberculosis and other infections that come in internationally, but this was impacting different ages, different demographics, and it was having such an impact on the immune system that we did not know our normal practices would even work.
This wasn't just a clinical crisis. It was also a personal crisis for many of your colleagues.
Right. This one was more isolating. We really couldn't go back to our families. We needed to protect our families. And understanding that you are the front line, we are grateful to have our jobs, but again, I believe some staff would actually have hoped that they wouldn't be required to be that frontline healthcare provider.
So it's also your job to attend to the fear and the burnout among the staff.
Absolutely. That was something I also made sure we brought into play, and we created a on-call beeper that literally staff could page in real time to receive therapy if needed. And our teams have been using it as a nurse or any healthcare provider. You just feel this overwhelming grief that everyone's experiencing, all these people that have died, not even having family at their side, and the funerals that are not occurring. And any patient right now who's dying does not have a loved one at their side. So as a nurse, that's an additional stress.
Have you made use of this therapeutic support?
I haven't seen my family in 2 months, so I count on this therapist a lot, to say the least.
Do you have a sense that the general public really appreciates all that American health workers are undergoing to save lives?
That's a tricky question. I do believe that they sincerely appreciate, but now as we are trying to reopen, I fear that there is a little less respect for what we've been doing and the sacrifices that our teams and staff have been making.
Anything you'd like to add? Maybe something you'd like to say to our African listeners?
Do your best. Good luck, and reach out for support from anyone and everywhere. And may God be with you.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the World Food Program warns of a looming hunger. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
I tried to like ask somebody for money, and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. At least 200 million Africans will suffer from hunger and malnutrition by December this year. That's according to World Food Program, that estimates that millions of children below the age of 5 will be the most affected if COVID-19 pandemic continues. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the World Health Organization is asking countries to adhere to the COVID-19 measures and slow the spread of the virus.
As COVID-19 continues to spread in sub-Saharan Africa, the World Food Program says food production will be affected in many countries. Chris Nikoi, Regional Director, World Food Program, West and Central Africa, said that more than 135 million people may not be in a position to feed themselves if the respective governments will not manage the spread of the virus.
Before the COVID-19 pandemic, hunger was already a real concern for many people in many parts of the African continent. Another 135 million globally could be added on who may be at the risk of not being able to feed themselves if something is not done. Most people who are producing food are smallholder farmers, and they tend to be the age population. If this age population begin to be affected by this pandemic, it will have serious implications for food production.
Trade and transportation of food at the border points in most African countries is at standstill, as most countries are cautious of people coming in from other countries spreading the virus. Mr. Nikoi said World Food Program is working with ECOWAS member states to have smooth movement of food and essential goods. He warns this year more than 12 million children between the age of 6 months to 5 years will suffer from malnutrition.
We are trying to provide policy advice that ECOWAS countries across the board will be encouraged to adopt so that food flows much more smoothly. And I hope that in Eastern Africa, they will also be looking at similar measures. Food systems are not functioning. If mothers cannot get access to reasonably priced, nutritious food for their children, we are going to have a very serious malnutrition problem across the continent.
On the other hand, Dr. Mashidiso Moet, World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, said that undernourished people are at risk of contracting COVID-19 virus since they have weak immune system.
This is an urgent issue, as more than 200 million people are undernourished in the WHO African region, and the pandemic is making the hunger situation worse. Undernourished people have weaker immune systems and may be at greater risk of severe illness if infected. On the other side, we also know that obesity and diabetes are linked to a higher risk of hospitalization and death related to COVID-19.
According to WHO, more than 72,000 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed, with additional 2,500 deaths reported, affecting 47 countries out of 54 in the African continent. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Some employees working for the Pyramid International Hotel in Juba have sued the hotel for terminating their contracts. The hotel management says economic challenges in South Sudan is to blame for their decision. The South Sudan's Ministry of Labor issued a circular to employers in March advising employers to avoid terminating contracts during the COVID-19 pandemic. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
In a letter to workers informing them that their jobs were being terminated, Pyramid Continental Hotel Management did not specifically say business had declined due to COVID-19, but said it would not retain all employees due to what it called the current situation. Abraham Abel, a lawyer representing the 5 employees who were let go at the new 5-star hotel in Juba, says the current situation referenced in the Pyramid Continental letter is in fact the COVID-19 pandemic, which he says is a global matter. Abel says terminating staff contracts due to the pandemic is illegal. He also says the hotel did not give the fired employees who all worked in the security sector official notice per the terms of their contract. He says efforts to resolve the matter with the Ministry of Labor have failed.
The Minister of Labour actually is responding very negative about the dismissal of those employees, and they are the citizens of this country. They are working in this country, and they are feeding this country. They are paying tax to the country.
William Manut Kir, one of the dismissed workers, says his contract was due to end in August. He claims hotel management fired the group of workers after proposing to send them home on a leave without a pay, a decision he says is contrary to a circular released by the Ministry of Labour on April 6, which instructed businesses not to terminate employees due to COVID-19.
They tried to force us to go for unpaid leave, and then when we objected it is the reason why they targeted our section. And our section is the smaller section within Pyramid Continental Hotel. So our section cannot actually be compared to other departments.
Peter Yai, another Pyramid Continental Hotel employee whose contract was terminated, says management tried to send home 5 employees on unpaid leave for 14 days last month, a decision the workers accepted. But after the 14 days of unpaid leave was over, management wanted to continue the unpaid leave, a proposal the workers rejected. Yai says he and the other fired employees have sued the hotel, insisting their termination was illegal. The South Sudan Labor Ministry circular issued in April says employers are advised against the termination of staff as a result of the impact of restriction due to COVID-19. It also says non-essential staff should be given paid leave covered by the employers. Aside from the government circular, Yai says the hotel did not give the employees a written notice per the terms of the contract. He says the employees were surprised to receive termination notices.
In business, you gain profit and sometimes losses can happen in business. And our employer look at it when they are paying us, they may think that they are at loss, which we think they may be right, but we have a contract with them.
Mary Hilary Wani, Undersecretary of the Ministry of Labour, says the ministry is encouraging both sides to work out a compromise.
We are encouraging both the employers and the workers to reach some sort of agreement that that will allow them to pass this period now that is challenging as posed by COVID-19 until we overcome this period.
Agasio Akol Arop is Deputy Secretary General of the South Sudan Workers Trade Union Federation.
This is not the time of which we dismiss or we terminate the contract of our employees. Why we cannot wait until the period of pandemic should be at least to reduce. If there is something like that also, you cannot fire somebody in such a situation.
The general manager of the Pyramid Continental Hotel and 2 human resource representatives with the hotel declined to speak to South Sudan in Focus, saying they could not comment on the matter since it is in the hands of the court. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
More than 80 juveniles were released from detention in South Sudan over the weekend to decongest prisons. The head of the protection at the UN Children's Agency in South Sudan says children who committed minor crimes were released and handed over to their parents or other legal guardians. Human rights groups say South Sudan's prisons are overcrowded with inadequate access to food and health care. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
A 16-year-old former prisoner who we are calling Edward to protect his privacy was accused of defiling a 3-year-old, a crime he says he never committed. Speaking in Arabic, Edward says he is excited to be free. He says he is the breadwinner at home and tells South Sudan in Focus he worries about how he will take care of his single mother.
Yani ana gaid.
Right now, I am just at home. There is nothing to do at the moment, and that bothers me a lot because I'm the only child who helps my mother. Before I went to prison, I used to work as a mechanic, and whenever I get some money, I give it to my mother. So what I need to do right now is to try and look for a job, but the challenge is that my mother is not working and there is no way that I can enroll myself in school.
A 17-year-old boy, we shall refer to as James, was accused of defiling the same 3-year-old child with his friend Edward in the Gudele residential area last year. Speaking in Arabic, he says while in prison, the guards beat juveniles for no reason. James also says he feels lucky to be among the 85 juveniles released.
We were taken to the police cell on death 14 November last year and then taken to Juba Central Prison on death 11 December 2019. I feel so happy and thankful for my release. Right now I am home, but I wanted to go to school so that I can build my future so as to help my family once I complete my education and get a good job. What I wanted to add is that my father has no job to help pay for my school fees.
Speaking with tears in his eyes, Jamie's father, a 60-year-old retired civil servant, Maker Philemon, says he was disappointed when his son was jailed without proper court procedures as he could not afford to hire a lawyer.
Half of the blame comes back to him. Why did you involve yourself in such a thing? So within me there was anger and happiness at the same time. In fact, I trusted him so much. But allowing such an issue to creep on him was a mistake. For instance, going around in the villages around Juba was not good. Going with the band, a group of youth and so on, you never tell exactly what the character is.
John Sleeby, the head of child protection at UNICEF, says after many discussions with UNMISS officials and countries' gender, child and social welfare ministries, prison officials agreed to free children accused of committing minor offenses to ease overcrowding at the facility during the pandemic. Libby says about 11 children remain in prison due to the severity of their alleged offenses. He says South Sudan judiciary is still going through cases to decide what is in the best interest of the children held at the Juvenile Rehabilitation Center in Juba. Libby says the children who were released will go through a reintegration process.
The aim is to bring them back to normal life. That is to say, for a child who has been away from his or her family environment. Secondly, to attend school, and thirdly, to attend all social activities that are related to children.
In a press release by UNICEF last week, the children agency says South Sudan lacks a juvenile justice system that takes into consideration the special needs of children in contact with the law, regardless of whether they are guilty as charged or not. UNICEF says too many children are imprisoned for minor offenses in South Sudan and many are serving their sentence with adults, which is a clear violation of children's rights. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. I have been getting a lot of heat from my community members who claim I am not representing them very well. They say I should always play music from my village. My answer to their complaints is this: I don't represent any community on this show. We now leave you with a traditional song by the Baka community in Maridi State. Oops, pardon me. President Salva Kiir changed it to Maridi County. I am John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again for South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.